Hello, and welcome to this podcast from Consider This. Please let me know what you think and tell others about us on social media. This podcast was originally broadcast live on Northumberland 89.7 FM. You can hear this show live every Friday at noon. Thank you for downloading this program, and I hope you enjoy it. Hello, I'm Robert Washburn, and welcome to Consider This Northumberland, a current affairs program dedicated to the issues facing our community. We talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life in Northumberland County. So I'm asking you, the listener, to take some time out of your busy day to consider this. There are more than 10 organizations in Northumberland County that support farmers and promote buying local food. There are also numerous municipal rural committees to support agriculture and rural life. In our first interview, you will meet Jody Carr, the events and festival coordinator for Incredible Trent Hills. It runs the Incredible Edible Festival in Campbellford, but it also does a lot more, including a school program teaching grade 8 students how to grow and prepare food on their own. Take a listen and see if you think this is a program that should be happening in your area. I'm so pleased to welcome Jody Carr, the events and festival coordinator for Incredible Trent Hills. Welcome to Consider This Northumberland.
Thank you so much for having me.
There are at least 10 key organizations and councils dedicated to supporting farmers, local food production, and 7 farmer markets that advertise and promote themselves. Plus, there are various municipal councils with rural committees that are working to support local agriculture and agribusiness. Now, all of them say they are supporting local food production and buy local. What makes your organization, Incredible Trent Hills, unique within this robust environment?
We partner with everybody. We partner with the local farmers market. We partner with the local farms. We have some very unique programs as well. Our flagship event is the Incredible Edible Festival, which happens the second Saturday in July. This year, it'll be our 11th. But through the festival, we support 150 small local businesses. But we also run 2 community gardens that have not only family plots, but also community beds. We also go into the schools and teach grade 8s how to plant, harvest their own food, as well as take a chef in each month and teach the students how to grow food. I mean, how to cook their food from scratch. So we do a lot of things. We have our local farm map. The farm map that you can go on our website and say, I want to buy local eggs. Where can I do that? Click, 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 and find the local place that you want to grab your eggs or your vegetables. So we do a lot in a lot of different areas.
Why are partnerships so important? These organizations exist on their own. Why is it important that you partner with them? What is the advantage to them and to the community?
Well, I think that partnership is important. It allows us to share resources. For example, the Friday before the festival is the Incredible Doctors Cook-Off. So we partner together and we share the tents, the generators, the Blue Loos, the things that we need to operate. It allows each of us to raise more money for our programs and work together with infrastructure that's already there for both events. For farms, farmers are out in the fields. We know all of our maple farmers have been under a flood of sap recently. So we can go around, take pictures, help promote them while they're busy doing the growing of the food. We visit local farmers markets, not just in Campbellford. We visit Codrington. We visit farmers markets all over. We go all the way up to the Peterborough Farmers Market and bring back information and bring back vendors so the community gets to perhaps meet new vendors and new businesses that they haven't been exposed to before, increasing the audience for those vendors and increasing product knowledge for our community.
When were you founded?
Incredible Trent Hills is 13 years old. So it started with the Incredible Edible Festival 13 years ago. And then in 2021, we added the Simpson Street Community Garden. In 2022, we took stewardship of the Doxy Street Community Garden. And then 4 years ago, we started the school nutrition program.
How did it originally come about?
It's a great story. It is a story of a group of women gathered around a kitchen table talking about how do we share the best of the best? This community has so many great things. How do we introduce that to everyone and share that? So they started what was then called the Incredible Edibles Festival. With their vendors, and it grew from there. I joined the team in 2019. We added an artisan market. So before that, it was strictly food vendors, but we added an artisan market, and we've just continued to grow from there. This year, we have 104 vendors on the street, food vendors, artisans, and community groups.
For people who may not be familiar with the festival, can you maybe give us some details and kind of explain what happens?
Sure. We close down Front Street South from Bridge to River in downtown Campbellford. The event goes from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. It's a free entry event. We'll have all the vendors, children's activities. We have Critter Corner, which is where you can go and get hands-on, meet some alpacas. We have a fire truck that children can explore. Adults can explore it too. We'll have live music all day. This year, we have the Ilk performing, as well as the Canadiana Band on our main stage, but there'll be entertainment throughout the day, children's activities, a beer garden where you can stop and grab a beverage. It's a pretty incredible experience, and all of our vendors are from within 100 kilometers of Trent Hills.
I'd like to talk to you about the school program. You mentioned that in your earlier remarks, and I understand that it's a big part of what you do now. Tell us in detail what that's about.
Sure. So 4 years ago, we started with the help of the Community Foundation in Campbellford, and we started at two schools. We go into the grade eight classrooms, and we, in September, we take those students into the community garden to help harvest what the students the year before planted. And then from October to March, we bring a different local chef into the grade eight classes. They teach the students how to make something from scratch. What that is decided by the chefs themselves. And then we take the students back into the community gardens from April to June to learn how to plant and grow their own food. Last year, with the help of United Way, we were able to expand into two more schools. So currently we are in four schools. That's Kent, Hillcrest, Hastings Public School, and St. Mary's.
Why grade eight? Why not farther along in their education, say, 11, 12?
Well, we always have room. We always have room for high school students. The reason we're in the grade eight classes is because this directly aligns with their curriculum. So when we go in, we're not just going in as a special event or a special activity. We go in every month and we help them actually meet the curriculum requirements for grade eight help.
Are there not cooking classes in local schools?
There used to be cooking classes in a lot of schools. Unfortunately, not all schools have the capacity to have a kitchen that works or to be able to offer those programs anymore. And so it's something that we heard a lot of people wanted students to have access to. And so that's what we're trying to do.
Do you get any feedback from them as they go through the rest of their education?
Definitely. There are students who have been part of our school nutrition program who look to us once they get into high school for help with their volunteer hours, who want to help out at the festival, who want to come back and be part of the gala. The first Saturday in March every year, we do our big fundraising gala, and that's where students choose to come and help us serve and cook food and meet the guests and talk about the school nutrition program. And also this year, we have implemented the Mark Andrade Taste of the Future Scholarship. And that will be first time this year, go towards a student from Campbellford who is going into the culinary arts in their post-secondary education.
How big an issue is it when it comes to young people being able to cook for themselves?
Oh, that's sad. I hadn't heard that statistic before. That's really unfortunate. What we've seen is that when students get in the kitchen, they love it. We were just talking to some of the families. Tell us about what your student has learned, just in a very casual way. And we heard that, oh, not only are they willing to try more foods, they want to help plan meals. And they're so excited to come home and share what they've learned and cook for their families. We had one chef this year who had a very young child. And because cooking was his profession, he didn't always let his child participate in the kitchen. But after seeing the school nutrition program, the joy that the students got from being in the kitchen, he brought his son, who is young elementary, into the kitchen with him because he saw firsthand the benefits. I think that once given the opportunity to cook, students really do find joy in it.
What are you discovering, though, locally in terms of the fact that young people may not be being exposed to cook the skills of cooking or just being able to feed themselves and be independent?
Well, so far, our school nutrition program has changed that for 290 students. So those 290 students now do have skills, everything from, you know, cooking eggs. Chef Simone went in and taught them all about eggs, how to cook eggs differently, how to cook eggs, you know, properly. And then we had Sign Langford come in. She's taught some of the programs. Jordan Leal came in. The students have learned how to make focaccia. They've learned knife skills from Kim, who's our school nutrition program leader, and she has taught them all knife skills. So those basic skills that they can go home and help with in the kitchen. And so I know for a fact that at least 290 students have benefited from the skills they've been taught in the school nutrition program.
But I guess what I'm wondering is, what are the factors that are impacting these skills? Like, what are some of the barriers that are preventing young people from universally knowing how to cook? I guess I'm reflecting on what used to be called the home economics class, where it was part of curriculum.
I would say that education took a focus another way. There was a lot of skills, you know, standardized tests that have to be met. And some of those skills that I think were usually taught at home, just they didn't have room for in the curriculum anymore. And with the prevalence of sort of fast microwave food when children got home, there maybe wasn't seen the need for students to have those skills. But I would beg to differ. I think those skills are pretty important and pretty lifelong skills. And I think it's important that we get back to teaching them in the schools, which is why programs like our school nutrition program help. It doesn't rely on the school to organize the chefs or to organize the programming. You know, once or twice a week, we go into the school, scoop up all the students, And our staff already have, so Kim is a holistic nutritionalist, but she also has her food handlers and all the other certifications that really make this program great. And we can just step in and sort of do that for the teachers. So the students are getting the curriculum that they need and the skills that will benefit them for the rest of their life. And we're helping out the school.
Community gardens are not a new concept and have been around for a while locally. What is it that your organization does that makes it different or special?
Our community gardens are an amazing place to gather. We have two gardens. We have the Doxy Street Garden, which was started in 2012. It is downtown Campbellford. We took over in the stewardship of it in 2022. It has five family beds. So, where people who might not have a backyard that's appropriate for growing gardens or backyard at all can come and have a bed, plant whatever they want in it, and grow it for their family. We also have seven community beds. So, a community bed just means we will plant things. Everyone helps tend to them, but anybody who wants or needs fresh food can go and pick from those gardens. Doxy Street also has two wheelchair accessible community gardens, which is great because getting down on the ground is not something that all of us can do. So that's really important and something that's a little special at Doxy. The Simpson Street Garden, which is the newest garden, which started in 2021 with the help of the Community Foundation. It has 16 family plots and four community beds. But more than that, it's a space to gather. It has a 6-foot woven willow tunnel. In 2025, we planted a little forest, which is 18 fruit trees that will be fruit bearing sooner rather than later, we hope. And this year, we're partnering with Empire Bees, which is a business started by two local 13-year-olds. And sometime in May, we will be installing an educational beehive with them. So it's not just a place to grow food, it's a place to gather. The Thursday before the Incredible Edible Festival, we have a garden gathering every year where people can come together and learn. It's not just about growing food, but about growing a community.
Why was it necessary to take over the community gardens? What was the impetus in that?
So there was a great group of volunteers running the Doxy Street Garden. I think that sometimes when one group has been doing it for a while, people move on, get new jobs that take away, and they don't really have the time to dedicate to gardens. Gardens do take quite a bit of work. So we're lucky enough to have an entire board of directors and a lot of volunteers, including Ashley, who is our garden coordinator. And she's the one who works year-round to organize the gardens. And I think that just having a larger group of people who can all lend a hand helped that. And then the Simpson Street Garden, we wanted more. We know how great gardens are, and we had a space that we thought could use some love, and it is now a beautiful garden.
I noticed on your website you are involved with the Rural Ramble. What's your role with them?
So the Rural Ramble is a program that we run. What it is the second Sunday in July, so the day following the festival, people can come out. They can get a passport, and the passport shows all sorts of local farm stands, local food businesses, local points of interest, and they go to each of those, complete a task. When they've done that, they come back to the clock tower in Campbellford, and we check their passport. We give them a few ballots, depending on how many stops they've made over the course of the day, and then they can win a chance for a weekend in Trent Hills in the fall.
What's the difference between the rural ramble and the farm tour?
So the Rural Ramble is a self-guided tour through the hills of Trent Hills. The farm tour is what event that's very special to me. We gather people together, we put them on a bus, and we take them to four curated farms. They get to spend an hour talking to the farmers, finding out the challenges and the excitement of being a farmer. They get to see where their food comes from. We were at a dairy farm last year, where we got to see how cows are milked, and hear about the multi-generational farm. We've been to apiaries where we get to learn all about bees. So we have that hour and a bit of education with the farmer. We also do a farm fresh catered lunch for everybody. And it's really nice, relaxing day where we get to learn and travel Trent Hills.
I know there'll be some listeners that'll be hearing all of this about the ramble and the tour, and they'll be going, well, wait a minute. I remember the rural ramble back in the early 2000s, and I remember the farm tour that used to be put on by the Northumberland Federation of Agriculture. What happened to those, or how does that work now? What evolved from those things to today?
I am not sure why some of those things don't happen anymore. I unfortunately was not around at that time. I know that when we started running the Rural Ramble, we were able to reuse some of the signs that they had made, sort of take over, reduce, reuse, recycle. So the signs are the same. We run it a little differently. There were a few years where a lot of organizations, volunteers, sort of weren't able to come out during those few years where most of us were locked up at home. And unfortunately, after that, some programs just were no longer sustainable. But we have been running the Rural Ramble quite successfully. Last year, we implemented the extension of it. So the go out and spend the day and learn about all these places, and then maybe you'll win a weekend back in the fall. So a different season to see Trent Hills in all its colorful autumn foliage.
The time when we were all in, you were referring to COVID, were you? You mentioned earlier about partnerships. Do you partner with the Northumberland Federation of Agriculture for those two events, since they were both run by that organization earlier?
We do not.
I'd like to talk about the facilitated community meetings where people are gathering and learning about food-related issues. Why is that an important component of what you're trying to do with your organization?
So events like the Think Tank, it's an opportunity for everyone to come together from all aspects of food. When we talk about food, we're not just talking about the farmer in the farmer's market, but we're talking about the grocery store owners, the restaurateurs, the chefs. We're talking about all those people who are related to food in different ways. And sometimes conversations happen within one group, but it's really important that we all work together. A new initiative we're doing this year is Takeout Tuesday during the festival, where we're partnering with restaurants and local farms, and each of the restaurants will do a one-day feature on their menu that includes a farm fresh ingredient from somewhere local. So making sure that we're building those connections between different groups so that everyone gets to experience all the wonders of Trent Hills.
Well, for example, you just mentioned this event where local restaurants are going to bring in some local produce and create a dish. How long does that last after the event? I mean, does this take root and actually make a difference over the long haul, and it's not just what some might see as being a publicity stunt?
So everything starts somewhere. And so this is our very first year running it. And my goal when I created it was to build these relationships. So hopefully it is ongoing. I said to the restaurant, you tell me, what are you making? And I will go and find a local farm that does that, so that it takes some of the work out of the people who are in those restaurants working so hard for all of us, and the farmers who are on the farm growing the food. And we're just the go-between. So once that relationship is created, it's easier for the farmer to say, hey, I've got extra of this. Do you want it? Or the restaurant to say, I'm looking for this. Do you have it? So it's the first step in building that relationship that will hopefully continue.
You do a lot of different things. How do you pay for all this?
So Incredible Trent Hills has been the benefactor of a number of grants from the Community Foundation. We received some United Way grants, but we also do our big fundraiser. So our gala dinner in March, the first Saturday in March, is a big way that we raise a lot of money for the programs that we do. That gala will raise almost all the money we need for our school nutrition program and our community gardens throughout the year. So we also have some really incredible sponsors. So this year, our pumpkin sponsor is the Allaire Althouse Real Estate Team at Solid Rock Realty. They've stepped in. And then we have several other sponsors throughout the year. And between their generosity and the programs that we do, we're able to raise enough money.
What is your annual budget?
I'm just the festival and events coordinator, and I don't know the budget for everybody, unfortunately. I can tell you that to run a festival, it's about $40,000.
You don't have a general idea of just how much for the whole thing?
I don't, unfortunately.
Is this all done by volunteers, or are there some paid staff?
We are very lucky that this year we hired Anais as our new executive director. So she is a staff member who works for us about 8 hours a week, with definitely some volunteer hours thrown in. But the rest of us are volunteers. So our school nutrition program coordinator, our community gardens coordinator, and then the festival has our vendor liaison, our entertainment coordinator, and our entire board of directors.
Food, especially groceries, is becoming incredibly expensive. I doubt there's anyone who will not agree with that statement. Is buying local actually cheaper?
I think so. When you buy local at a farmer's market or from the farm itself at the farm gate, you're sort of bypassing the middleman. So there's a cost savings there. Also, it's local. There's the cost of transportation, not only financial cost, but the environmental cost of shipping things. So when you're able to walk down to the farmers markets, which all open in May, the Campbellford Farmers Market, I believe, is May 2nd, it's opening, and gather all of your things, definitely it's not as expensive, because there's that just cost of buying direct. But then also you get the opportunity to learn more about your food, to learn more about what you like, maybe try something different, because your farmer that you usually has a different vegetable in this week and is willing to talk to you and explain it. So you're more apt to try new things as well.
What about people who can't afford fresh foods or cannot get to a farmer's market? What options do these people have in the community?
Well, in Campbellford, we have the community pantry beds. So in both gardens, there is fresh food grown by our garden coordinator. We do an energy exchange. So if your family would like a private bed, We give that to you at no cost with the deal that you help care for the community pantry beds. There is nobody watching over those beds. If somebody needs some fresh food, they're more than welcome to go and harvest. There's signs in the garden that say, this is ready for picking, but there's no rules. You don't have to check in. If you need food, we have food growing right there for you.
The most recent stats I could find say that there are more than 800 farms in Northumberland County. About 114 of those sell direct to consumers. That's from 2021. There is the Northumberland Federation of Agriculture and the various commodity groups like the dairy farmers and the egg farmers of Ontario who represent these farmers. What value-added things does your organization bring to these farmers?
The farmers directly, we have our online local food map. So we ask farmers if they want to be placed on the map. It's a central location for people to go and look and find out about the local products. The farms on there are with permission. Some farmers don't want their address published. They would rather do it through a CSA box or something like that. But any farm that wants to be on the local food map is welcome to be put on there. We also invite the dairy farmers, the egg farmers, the turkey farmers, and all those farming organizations to the festival so they can meet directly with guests. We get about 5,000 to 5,500 people on festival day. And so we give those farm groups an opportunity to meet with the residents and guests and talk directly about what they do.
You used an acronym CSA. What does that mean?
Oh my goodness. You're going to catch me up on this one. It is, another name for it is the farm box. So what happens is you would purchase farm boxes, say 10 weeks from a farm. So the farmer knows how much to grow. Once a week, you go to the farm, pick up a box, and it's filled with all sorts of delightful things. You don't necessarily get to choose what goes in your box every week, but it's a way to support the farms directly so they know, oh, I need to grow this many carrots or this many squash, so that and you would pre-purchase that for the season. And they have several, I've seen several of our farms have their spring CSA boxes or farm boxes out. And it's just a great way to buy directly from a farmer that helps both the farmer and the person get some great food.
In light of your stated mandate, what is your organization doing to help residents of Northumberland become better educated about food? When you've talked to me today, I've heard a lot about Trent Hills. I've heard a lot about Campbellford, and that's fantastic. But how does the rest of the county benefit from the work that you're doing?
Well, like I said, we're a group of volunteers, mainly from Trent Hills, because we are incredible Trent Hills. But we would be happy to talk to anybody who might be looking to do a similar thing in a different part of Northumberland. We invite anybody to come to, we just had a garden gathering. Anybody is welcome to come to those and learn about our gardens and our projects. The festival is definitely open to everybody. We have some new things happening this year. So even if they've been before, I guarantee there's new exciting things happening this year. Anybody could, who is interested in reaching out to us to learn more about how to organize a festival, we'd be happy to chat with them about that. Or if somebody else was looking to set up school nutrition programs, all of our volunteers are really passionate about what we do, and we would be happy to share that knowledge to help other people or organizations who wanted to sort of mirror what we're doing in Trent Hills.
What is missing in terms of the network of producers and consumers? What does Northumberland need to do that's new?
That is a very good question. I think that We have started. There has been a lot of like think tanks recently where we have started to invite people in. The reports from that I have not seen yet, so I don't know what the outcome is. But I know there are the Food Policy Council was doing some. Incredible Trent Hills, our outreach coordinator, Amanda, was doing some work with sort of asking those questions to people. How can we do? What do we need? And I think that's important, not just one organization saying, well, we believe this is what needs to be done and we believe this is what people need, but asking those people directly, asking everyone in the community, what would make it easier for you to do this? What are the barriers preventing you from doing this? And then work with that directly.
So, if there are some listeners that would like to mark their calendar, what's coming up that they should know about?
Oh, we have so many things coming up. May 9th, we have our Lug a Mug, which is in partnership with the Northumberland Land Trust. And that is a ticketed event. You can go on our website, www.incrediblehills.ca/mug, and get your ticket. And that's a lovely walk around the Seymour Conservation Area with one of the No Northumberland Land Trust volunteers to talk about all the beautiful things that are happening. Then they come back and have a cup of or a mug of chef-inspired soup. So that's a really great fundraiser for both the community gardens and the Northumberland Land Trust. We have our garden at the end of April has a compost drive. So if you need compost for your garden, once again, visit our website and you can find out more about that. And then Festival Week is our big week. So we have activities happening from July 6th through to July 12th, with our big events being the Saturday, July 11th, Incredible Edible Festival, and the July 12th Rural Ramble.
Jodi Carr, I want to thank you so much for talking to me today.
Thank you so much for having me. Thank you for letting me share all about Incredible Trent Hills.
That was Jodi Carr, the events and festival coordinator for Incredible Trent Hills. I want to thank my guests this week for talking to me, and I want to thank all the listeners for tuning in today. Please join me again next week when we will talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life and Northumberland County. So please tune in. If you would like to listen or share this or any podcast, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. There you will find past podcasts, news, and other information about life and politics in Northumberland County. Or you can go to the radio station's website at northumberland897.ca. I'm Robert Washburn. Thanks for taking time out of your day to listen in, and I hope over the week you will continue to consider this. Thank you for listening to this podcast from Consider This. If you have any comments or would like to suggest a story, please contact me at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com, or you can message me on Facebook at Consider This. If you enjoyed this podcast or are looking for more news and information about Northumberland County, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. That's consider-this.ca. And don't forget to share. And again, thank you for listening and stay tuned for more from Consider This.